news, talk, cards. KMOX AM St. Louis. KMOX FM Hazelwood. Always live on the free Odyssey app.
Tom Ackerman in our KMOX studios. Let's go live to Energizer Park. The introduction of Corey Ray, the new sporting director for St. Louis City SC.
The trust that they've given me and also just going through the process with them helped me a lot in terms of clarity in the vision and what I know we can achieve here. So a really big thanks to them and the process. Second thing is my family. I think you guys will get to know me, hopefully, over the next little bit. They are the most important thing to me, and I could not do this without them. And that includes my wife's family, extended family, everybody. It's been a really, really great process having them over the years, supportive. They've been at big games, also really sad games. And so as you guys can probably imagine, it's a tough business, and always having a group of people like that to support you, it means a lot. So that's clear. The last family member, obviously, is my wife. Hopefully you'll get to know her as well. I don't think I could be in this position without someone like her. And I also don't think there's enough time in a press conference to list all the things that she has done to help me. Excuse me if I get a little bit emotional, but it's truly something important to me to have a teammate that I can go home to that understands the challenges in the business and who can listen and provide support like she did, and she will. And I know you guys have a really special person coming to your city, and we're very excited for that. When we do get that all settled, that's another topic for another day. And then at the end of this, in terms of the sporting side and in terms of my process, I do want to thank two very important leaders that I had. The first being Ali Curtis, who's just been promoted to a great position at MLS. I did only work with Ali for a year in Toronto, but his support over the last 6-7 years has not gone unnoticed. And I think it would be a big miss to not mention him today. And then the second one is, you know, someone I worked with for probably 10 years plus, Tim Bezbachenko. His guidance, leadership, his support, his feedback, sometimes constructive criticism has made me a really, really great person. Obviously, someone capable to lead this next project, but most importantly, he's a great friend and someone that I truly value. So I think it's very important to recognize those who've helped get you somewhere. Okay, who am I? That's a tough thing again for a Canadian to speak about, but I am a product of my environment. I think you guys know how long I've been in the business, close to 20 years next year, working in all departments. Across that, I have worked with, I think, four ownership groups, five different sporting directors of some sort, hundreds and hundreds of players, 12 head coaches, multiple second team coaches, and then a lot of different people within the league and outside. I have been to five MLS Cup finals, you know, being part of a winning team in three of those. I've been to two Champions League finals, unfortunately losing those. And I say that not to brag or gloat, but I say that as an understanding of, you know, what you can learn from those opportunities and what you can learn in those moments. And I think that is what I'm bringing here. And with that, a very large network of people now throughout the world that I have been in contact with, have worked with, have signed contracts with, I think that will provide the necessary next steps for what we need to do here in the short term and the long term. Overall, I just want to talk quickly about next steps. I'm sure someone will ask, but I think it's very important so you guys know where we're at today. First and foremost, I just got here. So I think it's very important to understand we're going to have an assessment period. That will be very quick, but done to the best of my ability. It will be, you know, clearly looking at the roster, talking to all the staff, and I've already begun that over the last couple of days, and making sure I have a real firm understanding about what we have here internally. And then we will start to set a shared vision and direction going forward, and that will incorporate all of the people I just spoke about. making sure from that we're going to set new standards for high performance within the group, how we operate, communicate, and how we look at new decisions being made moving forward. We will then obviously be as transparent as possible with you, the media, our fans, our stakeholders about the direction we're going in, so you can follow along and obviously check that along the way. We're going to build a squad to meet standards that I see as a winning kind of formula. I think it's very important to understand that in squad building, the right pieces are not always available. I think you imagine you can just go out and get what you need and they're perfect characters and they fit everything the coach needs. That is not always the case. So please bear with me while we make sure we get the right people into the club. And then last but not least, achieve success. It's very clear that through this process, that is an important part of what the fans are looking for. I think people are knowledgeable enough to see progress, and that's what I hope we can show right away. But I'm here to win. I am a winner, and I'm very excited for the city and the rest of the fans to be part of that process as well, because there is nothing better than winning. I can tell you this right now. It is the best feeling, and I am very excited for that to happen here in St. Louis. So thank you.
Thanks, Corey. We'll start with Tom.
Hi, Corey.
Hello.
Hi, Tom Timmerman from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. What's your wife's name?
My wife's name is Jamie.
Jamie?
Yes.
J-A-M-I-E?
J-A-I-M-E.
J-A-I-M-E.
Yeah.
Just wanted to be able not to refer just as your wife.
Thank you. And she would like that too.
Yeah, well, that's fine. Yeah. How big of a challenge is this? How much work needs to be done for this team that has missed the playoffs now 2 years in a row to get them? And how quickly can it be done?
Yeah, that will be in the assessment phase. But I will tell you that we are in the short term going to need to do a few things to become more competitive. I don't think that's going to be a surprise to anyone. There is clearly some opportunities to improve the overall group. We will do that immediately. We have a few different opportunities through the MLS mechanisms coming up that you're probably aware of in terms of reentry drafts, free agency, and super drafts. So those will be looked at as quickly as possible from a add as quickly as possible kind of way of doing things. And then from there, we need to set a lot of things in the structure long term. So you're talking about real big decisions need to be made on structure for the larger decisions from a MLS mechanism, your TAM players, your DPs. That will take a little bit longer to make informed decisions on those. And I could see those taking, you know, I don't want to put any timelines on anything, but those will be the things that I'll be working towards into the new season for sure, as we look for a longer term sustainable and competitive environment here.
How do you feel about DPs? This is a club that has not really plunged into yep. the DP market, but do you feel the resources are there that you can go out and get what you want and to add yep. for the next year? A DP?
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, just in my experiences, we need to be very cautious about just getting a DP or getting the right DP. I'm sure people will tell you that. And in terms of what that looks like, a lot of work needs to be done behind the scenes to ensure that we do have a good strike rate on those players. So I am confident that there is a desire to win in terms of the ambition of ownership, and they are committed to resourcing that how we see fit. So I will get into those discussions further in terms of setting budgets and looking at that, but I don't see that as being something that is going to be prohibitive in terms of my plan. I think it's about providing a plan that makes sense, that is supported by all the different things when you are looking for additional funds. I think you need to do your job to create, I'd say, some sort of confidence in that process. And then from there, I see a huge desire to be a part of that global transfer market and look for the right player for St. Louis, for sure.
We'll go to Justin.
Hi, Corey. Justin Horniker, St. Louis Magazine. As you kind of look past to some of your past work in Toronto and Columbus, a lot of that is just building the foundation through the player pathway. That's something that this club has wanted to do very well. If you look back to those successes, is there anything that you would point to as wanting to bring from how you set up those organizations to here that maybe hasn't been done or maybe that you think can be done better?
Yeah, as I'm still trying to figure out what's been going on, from a deeper level, I think just high level, just making sure that all the different parts of the club are speaking to each other. You know, that is the easiest way for me to say when I'm taking a decision to trade for, acquire a player, that we've done all the work internal to project out when the pathway is set for the next player in that position, that we're not blocking that player. And then deeper than that, you know, we need to do a good job at benchmarking across the club, highlighting what great is, what makes an MLS player in the pathway. And I'm confident in the group right now, from what I've heard, that they're doing a good job. But in my experience, you know, there is a possibility that a non-efficient pathway is one that simply just needs to be brought together through communication and through working with each other a little bit more formally. So I don't think that's hard. The hard part is when you are missing those conversations, when you are not considering what you might have internally. And I think that is where we just need to create some alignment. But I'm very excited about that pathway and being a big part of our success in the future.
Yeah, and as you think of like your interview process and looking elsewhere, was that something that drove you to this project of just knowing that some of those pieces might have been in place?
For sure. Every project is going to be different. And so there's not, I never thought about, you know, oh, I've done it somewhere, I'm going to do everything the same here. I'm very mindful now after my experiences that that is not a good way to start your job. And so yes, from what I've heard, the pathway and what I've seen clearly at the higher levels is a strong pathway with good success. What I've heard, you know, outside of that is that the player pool is strong. This deeply knowledgeable soccer city, which with roots, you know, far beyond, you know, my date of birth. And so I think that means we have a real good opportunity to continue to grow that and to continue to provide the opportunity for our players to achieve their goals. So I we'll get into more of that, but I'm very excited about the opportunity to bring more players from here into the first team for sure.
We'll go to Jen Sees, then Matt Baker.
Hi, Corey. Jen Sees with KMOX Radio. You said very fairly that you can't possibly, you know, the players that you might want to have aren't just easily available. But if you did in a perfect world have a person kind of profile player that you like to look for, is there anything in particular in building a roster, qualities of soccer players that you tend to be drawn to?
Yeah, I hate to give like a highly political answer, but I don't want to sit here and start to list those out until we finalize some of the bigger pictures. So how I would maybe come back to do that at a later date would be to first ensure we set the vision of how this club wants to play. You know, that could be very different across many different clubs, and that could mean ideal players are very different for each club. So first, that will be a major next step for me in terms of getting that.
All right, we have a bit of a frozen Zoom there coming from Energizer Park. That is Corey Ray, the new sporting director for St. Louis City SC. Let's go back.
On my end, I think from a sporting leadership side, it's to give the coach all the necessary tools for him to be as good as he can as a coach, and to not limit the tactical or technical things that he sees in his vision by kind of pigeonholing some of the profiles. So, simply, players who are quite flexible, tactically, technically, capable physically, and obviously who fit the culture that we have here, not only in the club, but in the city, I think is the easiest way to define what I'm going to do next.
Fair enough. A quick follow-up, because I can mention a specific player because we know.
Another freeze up there. And Jen Cease's question, too. I mean, you know.
I just want to hear Jen ask questions.
That's all we want.
Problem around here.
And, Corey Ray. So we're going to toss it over to Michael Calhoun for a newscast here because we've got a couple of hiccups there. Let's see if we can grab just the last part of that, Matt.
So having someone in that position with the history, with the performances, with the character, I'm happy that that's not another piece that I need to go out and look for. And I'm very confident as we kind of develop the squad that he will be someone that's crucial to our success for sure.
Matt.
Hi, Corey. Matt Baker with Flyover Footy Podcast.
Hi.
I want to talk about your time with Montreal real quick. Sure. You've gone through a lot of successes with Toronto and Columbus, and they're some of the best in the league. Your time with Montreal was very short. Could you describe to us what your role was with Montreal? Because it seemed like it evolved a little bit and you didn't make very many press conference appearances, very many appearances to the media. Can you talk a little bit about what your evolving role was with Montreal?
Yeah, sure. I think first and foremost, for the role itself, I think it's clear I came in as a consultant and that moved into a more permanent role there. The second thing that is clear to kind of explain is that the Montreal setup was very much a council in terms of decision making, and I sat on that council. So that was the role, and that's what kind of my day-to-day look like, was providing feedback, providing expertise or any sort of knowledge in any area that the council needed to. And then as a group, we make a decision. So that's what the setup was. As far as maybe a follow-up question you might have, I will not sit and speak badly about any of my experiences. And I think I am truly grateful for the opportunity that the Saputo family provided me. Their history and investment in that city is obviously pretty clear, what they've done to develop the game in Canada. As a Canadian, I'm greatly thankful for that because it's grown the game. And so I see that as maybe a difficult time for me in terms of their vision for wanting to do things in a different way. But I saw it as a really great moment for me to learn. And it really helped me prepare for my opportunity here in terms of really trying to think about establishing a clear vision, refining some of those processes that maybe didn't work so great when I was there. And I can't thank them enough for that opportunity. And to the fans there who never heard from me, they should be pretty excited about what's next. Tactically, what was able to be done with the council to the roster sets them up in a really good way for this offseason. And so I'm proud of the work that we did together. And I'm very excited for the fans to see what Luca and Simone and Gabriel can do next.
Without going too deep into the council structure, just as you come to St. Louis, would you compare this structure that St. Louis has more to what you experienced in, or what you expect the structure to be, to what you experienced in Columbus and Toronto?
Yes. Yes. So that's very important in terms of where I sit. I think it's clear that there is a large organization that also is part of this process. And I think people get caught up a lot in who does what. I see my role as clearly someone who is going to recommend to, at the end of the day, we all have bosses. I don't think you will ever get away from that until you're truly, free of any decision making from a business standpoint. You're either you're going to speak to shareholders, you're going to speak to somebody to make a decision. So I just want to be very clear. I am entrusted here to make the recommendations. I am here to provide all of the sporting, recommendation decisions on all of the sporting department. But I work for a great company that is going to also be part of that process. And so that includes obviously Diego and leadership, but that is very normal and that's what I'm used to. And so I think what you guys will see in the next years, months, whatever, is that it's not always going to be about me making a decision anyhow. I'd like to introduce you at some point to the other people as part of the process. I think the way in which we see decisions made in the sporting side is often too simplistic, and I'm happy to be the face and to speak about that, but there are so many other people that are part of that that need to be recognized. And I think for the fans, I'm very excited at some point to dive deeper in how those processes work. So hopefully that answers your question, but this is very much the same kind of setup that we had in Columbus. And certainly in terms of the sports and entertainment behemoth with Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment, it's very similar to a certain extent with the board, with leadership, with all of the things that we have here. And I'm very excited to work that way. It is a great way, despite maybe what people think on the outside.
It was reported recently that you provided a 120-page report or presentation as part of your interview for this position. Is there any insight you could give us into what that contained? And in the sense of, you said you have a lot of a lot of discussions to have. It seems like you've done your homework on this organization. And is there anything you could offer us insight into, maybe some of your ideas that contained for the future?
No, I think that. And I think it's very important to clarify the process. I think the purpose of something like that was to go through every part of the sporting structure, provide either examples, provide a framework around how it would work, provide an understanding of the level of detail that's required under my kind of guidance as a sporting leader, and to see if that matched what ownership was looking for. Clearly, it was aligned with what they're looking for when it comes to details, when it comes to even some of the things they weren't thinking about. But it's not to say that it was some crazy document or anything, but if you just list out all the processes within a sporting org, I tried to address all of those to be as thorough as possible. It was not something deeper than, you know, that next steps, how we work. But after that will be something a little bit more detailed in terms of the sporting vision, and the real meat of what I'm going to try to do will be provided the next time. It will not be 120 pages though. Yeah.
We'll go to Brendan Weezy, then Bill McDermott.
Corey, Brendan Weezy, KTRS Radio. How are you?
I am great. Yeah.
You may still be in the preliminary stages of this, but what in the infrastructure with the club do you see that needs changing? And are there things that you see that you'd like to see maybe remain the same, again, from just the early stages of what you've seen so far?
Yeah. High level, I think, just based on some high level assessments, we need to improve probably maybe some of the expertise in the sporting leadership. But again, I will harp on it. I am one person. I am not going to change everything by myself. I'm not going to be able to make this a powerhouse by myself. And so I think we could really use some additions in that space. The second thing is to kind of redefine or relook at how we're scouting players. There's probably a gap there. Currently, you know, we do have people on staff. I think my job will be to support them and to try to create a scouting process that can look at, you know, domestic, international, and then also incorporate the internal side that I was speaking about, and find a way that we can have it talk to each other. So those would be the two easy ones. Bigger than that, I think we need to look at how we use data in this day and age. I am someone who relies on it to a certain extent to help communicate across the traditional and then the non-traditional way of scouting or squad build or trends or anything like that. So I think, you know, in terms of using data, I would use the word data informed, making sure we are using it, making sure it's at the right place of the process, and then using it to make our traditional scouting and our other processes better. And so having the traditional side, I guess, you know, the art and the science of scouting, speak to the data, and have the data speak to the traditional scouting is how I see a working kind of process going. And I've seen that work really well in the past. So those would be the key areas. After that, you know, it's only day 3.5 since I've been here. I do believe we have some really good people in house. It's just about, you know, elevating, you know, their ideas, creating it a process that they're part of, and trying to align that in terms of how we communicate with each other. But those are maybe not so exciting for you guys, but that's something that I think is very important in a winning culture.
Bill.
Hi, Corey. Bill McDermott. How do I say this? Miscellaneous outlets. Welcome to St. Louis.
Thank you. Okay.
When you look, and you touched upon the job description of a head coach, and when you get into that overall process, what would you consider more important? Analytics, analyzing teams in the future, looking at tape, tactics, things of that nature, or management of personalities? What would you consider more important for a coach?
Yeah, it's a very good question. The way that I look at it, and the way that, you know, as a group, we've had some really good success in the past, is first, very, very important to get this clear. They have to be a good person. And I think the character of that person is going to be paramount to moving past any first stage of what we're doing. I will be very firm on that, because for you guys, maybe you know or don't know, it is going to be a person I'm going to be working with most hours of the day, and that our club is going to be working with many hours of the day. And so if you do not have someone who is going to have a high character and be a good person, I think we stop the process there. From that, we will then start to look at our club and the vision I spoke about of what we're trying to do and where they fit into that. And I think that is going to be the next stage of defining the profile. And so what I mean by that, some of the things you spoke about. So how do they use, you know, film? How do they communicate with the players? How do they break down the match reports? You know, how comfortable are they using some form of data? And do they feel like they are able to sit with a group and work collaboratively? Or are they a person who needs to be by themselves and we just have to cater to them? I think I'm looking for the first version of what I'm explaining. And then we get into the X's and O's and the coaching, but we do not go past those first two stages if it's not right. And I think that will be very important in this process to make clear that we are going to get those first two right before we go on the last one. And then you get into all the other fun stuff that you guys will for sure ask about after every game. They will be very capable at that, but they will not be afforded the opportunity unless they hit the first two.
That's Corey Ray, the new sporting director for St. Louis City SC, answering that final question from our Bill McDermott there. And somebody with a lot of MLS experience, 20 years of experience. In fact, for baseball fans listening, this is a similar path taken by Chaim Bloom, who has been in Major League Baseball for 20 plus years as an intern. He started in Toronto. He worked his way through every position you could think of in front offices, to the point where he recruited a lot of the players that were successful for the Championship Columbus Crew. Most recently was brought into the Montreal organization, then let go, similar to what Chaim Bloom did, a brief stint in Boston, and now has had his opportunity. A data-driven front office member here in Corey Ray. He just talked about it. A lot of the things that Chaim believes in as well, and it sounds like a lot of collaboration is what they're looking for here, and a lot of success. Obviously, this was a long process. It has been a while since Lutz Vandensteel was let go, and they did a long search for their next sporting director, and they have landed on Corey Ray. We've just been carrying the press conference. They actually started a couple minutes before noon, about 11:58, so we carried it all the way through here on the Gas House Gang. We're going to take a break. We'll come back and dive back into baseball as we'll be joined by Danny Wexelman of MLB Network. Jason Sklar is also scheduled to join us. The comedian, the Sklar brothers are coming to St. Louis pretty soon. With Chris Ranji, I'm Tom Ackerman. Back after this.
Now back to the Gas House Gang, sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling on 104.1 FM KMOX.
Back on the show after carrying that live press conference, MLS and the new sporting director for St. Louis City SC, Corey Ray. Welcome to St. Louis, and we welcome in from ESPN, SiriusXM, MLB Network Radio. Love listening to those shows, as well as we should absolutely mention Mizzou made, and most importantly, St. Louis native Danny Wexelman joining us on KMOX. How are you?
Oh, man, I am so good. I am recovering from the last couple weeks. I feel like people are already talking about spring training, and I'm like, hold on a second. I need to get a couple more hours of sleep. But no, I'm fantastic. Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you. Yeah, what did we just witness? I mean, that was really unbelievable, and you were there. I mean, it happened quickly, didn't it?
Yeah, I am so, so lucky. I got a chance to work the postseason for SiriusXM, and I started with the ALCS. But even before that, I was going to the ALDS games. I'm based in New York, so I got to see the Blue Jays early against the Yankees in that series. And then we were off and running. I was looking at my expense reports today, trying to get them done, which I'm sure everyone can relate to in life. I didn't do a good job of managing that, but it was 8 flights and 6 hotels in 3 weeks. And like, I wouldn't have it any other way. I'm so grateful. But I feel like I just saw a number of 51 million people watched Game 7 between the United States, Canada, and Japan. It's the most watched Major League Baseball game in 34 years. And I can't believe what I saw. I feel like baseball's in such a great spot right now. And I was just grateful to be a part of it.
It was one of the more eventful World Series that we have ever seen. And a lot of people think that it was the best one we have ever seen. I wonder if we are being a bit of a prisoner of the moment on that. But what do you think?
Gosh, well, I can't speak to the entire history of baseball because I'm not 100 years old, but I can speak to my colleagues. You know, I have colleagues who are such historians of the game, and I've worked with people who document it so well, who feel that way, who weren't there and who weren't watching the ins and outs. Like, when you're kind of embedded in the postseason, going back and forth, and you're seeing people every day and you're watching these moments unfold, you're seeing it differently than people who are watching it from home. You get a different type of perspective. And I don't think people are being dramatic. I think that what we saw, the fact that we got to a game seven, number one, right, which is so rare. The fact that the Blue Jays had two game sevens, which is also extremely rare in a postseason to do that in the same year. And the Dodgers, who have captivated, you know, multiple countries and multiple parts of this globe because of their Japanese trio of players that they have, because the game went to extras, and Miguel Rojas, who is the most unlikely hero, right? In the bottom of the ninth inning, there's one out. The Blue Jays are two outs away, right? How many times does the World Series come down to a game seven, one out in the bottom of the ninth? Like, almost never do we get drama like that. And no matter who you're a fan of, your heart is racing because you know the Jays are so close. They haven't done it in 32 years, right? Their franchise started in 1977. This would be their third title. And the Dodgers are trying to do something that hasn't been done in a quarter of a century. And Jeff Hoffman's on the mound, and you have the bottom of the order, and Miguel Rojas, who, by the way, had only started his second game in the World Series at Game 7. It was his third game played, only his second start, and you would not expect him to tie the game with a home run. You would not expect a Game 6 winner for the Dodgers in Yoshinobu Yamamoto to come out of the pen and perform the way that he did. What we saw, we might never see that again, and for him to close it out, and Will Smith had the go-ahead, like that, I think that's why people feel that way, is because the elements involved in the game for an unlikely hero in Rojas to tie the game, for Yamamoto to come back out. By the way, like, he had thrown two complete games, right? He had pitched in game six, and then he came back out, and he was interested in throwing in that 18-inning marathon. Like, we just don't see that. And so I don't think that it is I don't think it is dramatic to say it could be the best game seven ever.
No, it was an amazing flip of a script when you thought that Toronto was going to handle this at home, that the Dodgers walked away with the championship. And you're right. I mean, I saw some people joke on Twitter. Somebody said Yamamoto is scheduled for game eight after the series was over. And somebody said, no, technically they did play eight games. I mean, they played two in one day. Yeah. It really was amazing. Was it good for the game? You know what I mean? There were a lot of people that looked at it and said, well, there they go again. The team that writes checks wins the championship. But we just said that it probably drew in a lot of casual sports fans who witnessed baseball at its craziest and most dramatic. It's a little bit of both, isn't it, Danny?
Yeah, let me speak to a couple things, because this is one of my favorite things to talk about, because the collective bargaining agreement is up after this season. And so there is a pretty big concern there will be a lockout, which means no baseball until the two sides, the players' side, and then, of course, the owner's side, come to an agreement. And so Dave Roberts made a comment after they won the NLCS, they swept, that they were ruining baseball. Let's win four more and really ruin it. And I think what we saw in the game, like, take out that it's the Dodgers, like, we saw incredible baseball. We saw pitching performances we may never see again. To see two complete games from one starting pitcher in the postseason from Yamamoto is so extremely rare. The average guy goes 4 1/3. So, like, we saw things like that. We saw incredible home runs. We saw Shohei Ohtani hit three home runs in a game and strike out 10 and go six innings, right? So we saw things like that. We saw the Blue Jays, who captivated not just a state, right? They're a country. They're an entire country that's watching one team. And I think that they injected a reminder of what the sport can be, and a reminder, like, you're watching the second generation of fans potentially see a World Series, right? In 93, when they won, let's say there were kids who were 20-something years old. And you fast forward 30 years later, and you have their kids watching this World Series, right? It's generations at that point, and you could see it in their faces. You could see it around the ballpark. Like, I can't tell you how special it was just to be in Toronto and witness that. And so that was incredible for the game. And then you saw the Blue Jays, who have guys like Ernie Clement, who was nominated for 2 Gold Gloves, who is the most lovable guy you could imagine. And guys like Vlad Guerrero Jr. and George Springer, who's such a great story. Like, we had such great stories, and the league did such a great job, I feel like, of marketing what we saw and making sure that you knew it wasn't just Ohtani and Guerrero Jr., right? You knew the other guys' names who were on those teams, which I think is also really important. And I will say this about the Dodgers. Like, yeah, do they spend a lot of money? Yeah, they're top 5 in luxury tax payroll. So are the Blue Jays. People forget the Blue Jays spent top 5 money last season. It's the exact same as what the Dodgers did. It was just spent in different ways. And the Braves could have re-signed Freddie Freeman, and the Red Sox could have re-signed Mookie Betts. And Shohei Ohtani was thinking about going to Seattle. Like, they're just because the Dodgers got them doesn't mean that that's how it was always going to go. It just worked out that way. And so I think that that's something people need to remember when we're talking about the Dodgers ruining the sport. Well, we should probably talk about the Mets and the Blue Jays, and maybe add the Phillies in there, right? Teams that are top 5 in luxury tax payroll. It's not just the Dodgers that are doing it, but I think that what we saw throughout the postseason, we saw the Tigers, we saw the Guardians, we saw the Reds sneak in. They got that wild card series right early with the Dodgers. We saw smaller market teams get the job done because they're really talented. There's less disparity because the draft is shorter. So if a first round guy, I think a first round guy is just as good as a 10th round guy. And I think that you're going to start to see that throughout the league and permeate throughout different teams. But if we have a lockout, that's going to hurt the game in a big way. And I'm concerned whether the Dodgers won or not, that it's going to happen, because the owners want a floor and a ceiling and the players are never going to agree to that. So it's tough. Like, we have the World Baseball Classic coming up in a few months, right? We have the Olympics in 2028. Baseball's back. Like, we just put up 51 million people watching Game 7. I feel like it's the worst time to slow down. And I can't say enough good things really about where I feel like the game is at. And I just hope that the two sides can figure it out before next year.
Danny Wexelman from Wildwood, definitely not from Eureka. We appreciate you being on the show today.
Well, wait a second now. Hold on. Do you have to say it like that? I love Eureka. I have a ton of love in my heart, but I didn't grow up in Eureka, so I just want to make sure my Wildwood family knew that that's where I'm from, and I appreciate it. I know my family's listening, and I'll be back for the holiday, so I always appreciate you guys having me and letting me come on to talk some ball.
One of the best baseball broadcasters out there, seriously. Danny Wexelman does a terrific job, and when we have you back on, and there will be a next time, we will break down the Cardinals with you. We look forward to that.
Yeah, let's do it. Guys, thank you so much.
Thank you. Danny Wexelman does a great job. ESPN, MLB Network Radio, really a good listen. And we appreciate her joining us. Coming up next, big Cardinals fan. Big. Jason Sklar. The Sklar brothers are coming to St. Louis next week for some stand-up.
Uh-oh.
And let's talk some Cardinals. Back after this.
Now, back to the Gas House Gang, sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling on 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Welcome back to the Gas House Gang. Boy, this next guest is a perfect fit for this show. Absolutely perfect. You've heard him on KMOX, and the Sklar brothers are coming to St. Louis November 14th through the 16th. It is an absolute pleasure to have Jason Sklar back on KMOX, the home of the Cardinals. How are you?
I am great. Thank you so much. I love KMOX. Grew up on it. They used to have, like, in the middle of the night, I forget, it might have been Jim White who was doing it, the trading station. Do you guys remember that?
No, they did have the trading station.
Wasn't it Art Bell, the middle of the night guy?
I think you're right. Jim did his own show, but the trading station was a thing for sure.
And it was like, someone's like, I have a dinette set that I'd like to sell. And then someone later is like, I got 2 lawn chairs and I want to talk to that lady with the dinette set. I'm like, is this a dating show? What are we doing?
It's great.
Get these people together. Let them, you know, figure it out. Let them give you your chairs. I love it. I love KMOX. Love St. Louis. We're so excited to come back for this amazing comedy festival. Come on out, St. Louis. Support it, and more good things like it will keep coming.
Did you enjoy the World Series? You're a big baseball fan. What was it like among Dodgers fans?
Well, I had placed a lot of money on this series with Ohtani's translator, so I did very well. So nice. Just so you know, I did great. No, I saw those. I'm heartbroken for Toronto. You know, obviously, if they won, there would have been big tariffs that they would have had to deal with the trophy. But I'm a huge fan of the fact that it went seven games, the fact that it went extra innings in the seventh game. As just a pure baseball fan, like when the Cardinals were out of the World Series, out of the race, which this year was in April, mm-hmm. when they were out of it and I knew that they weren't going to probably get there, my thought was like, okay, now I can just sit back and hope that it's exciting. And I thought this was pretty exciting as far as World Series go. Am I wrong?
No, it was great. I mean, it was one of the best. It had everything. Yeah.
It had everything. I mean, I love that, like, no-name guy. You know, Randy and I did a comedy special years ago trying to get Jose Oquendo into the Hall of Fame. And we did manage to get a homemade plaque that we made for him, for the utility player, put on the utility closet in the Hall of Fame. So I do count that as a victory. But we celebrate the guys who people don't celebrate, you know, as much, who we feel like are huge contributors. And I think Rojas is a perfect example of that. That guy coming in with the most super clutch hit in that series was fantastic. Loved it.
You know, you and your brother doing that podcast up until what? You ended it early this year, right? The Cheap Seats podcast, the sports podcast. Would you feel like you miss it? When something like that happens, you know, you got a World Series like that, you want to talk about it.
Totally. And, you know, we still do little hits of sports stuff on the NPR station out here in Southern California. And yes, I do miss it. We fill in for Jim Rome on his radio show and guest host his show like seven or eight times a year. But yeah, the weekly outlet to talk about sports, we loved it. We had done it for like 15 years. And, you know, over time, podcast landscape changed and we decided to focus, you know, more directly on our Dumb People Town podcast, which we're doing live on Sunday night in St. Louis on the 16th at the Pageant Theater. But that, because that's sort of the two, that was the one that was bigger. And right now, Randy and I are writing on this new Kevin Hart, Kenan Thompson sports show for Amazon called Good Sports, which is coming out soon. And that is where I get to pour all of my weekly sports love into writing for this show and hopefully doing a little something on it.
That is going to be great. And by the way, the Flyover Comedy Festival, flyovercomedyfest.com, is where the Sklar brothers are going to be right here in St. Louis. What is that like writing for those two and others?
It's super fun. You know, it's funny because so much of, you know, we did our show Cheap Seats on ESPN Classic, and that was our show. And then we did our sort of reboot of that for the UFC called The Nosebleeds. And in many cases, when we're writing for ourselves, it's a different type of writing because we know the type of humor that we do. But now to write for someone else, if I write a joke or Randy and I come up with like a sketch or a bit, and it comes off and it gets a laugh on the show, the feeling of that is so, I can only describe it as like when I see my daughter who plays like junior golf, when she hits a good shot and it's like almost feels better. She got a hole in one this year in a tournament. And I'm like, I think I was more excited for her to do it than if I had done it myself.
I love it. And by the way, speaking of like, you know, not very well-known Cardinals players, like Jose Oquendo for you guys, that would be too big of a name. I mean, Cesar Cedeño, that'd be maybe a little more in your wheelhouse. I mean, that's true. The two of you celebrate.
Mike Tyson.
There you go.
Mike Tyson, not the boxer, but the infielder. Ramsey. Like, I mean, there were so many great players. The Glenn Brummer is another name. Like, I can pull out any 80s Cardinals. And
Jeff Lonnie.
Mike Laga, the only player to hit a ball out of the old Busch Stadium. Like, we can go toe-to-toe when it comes to, like, obscure Cardinals players. Love them.
You're talking about writing a moment ago, writing for a different show and not for you or your brother. How hard is it to write in somebody else's voice?
I mean, I think it takes some doing. Like, it takes some recalibrating because, you know, the first thing you think of when something weird happens is you're like, okay, I'm going to make the joke that I would make, that your instincts go to whatever your voice is. And then with this, there's like an extra layer. You're like, well, would they say that? Is that a joke that they would make? And so sometimes you write a joke that you're really happy with, but you're like, that doesn't work
because that's not something that would come out of their mouths, or that doesn't feel like something they would do. Or this is way too edgy and mean about this, these celebrities, and these guys have relationships with these celebrities. There's no way they're saying that. So even if the joke works, you're like, I'm not going to make that joke. They're never going to make that joke. So that one was for me. Put that away in a drawer. And then this is the one I'm going to write for the show. So sometimes it's like that extra layer of writing, but it's good. I mean, that's, as a writer, you always say, like, you know, anytime someone says, oh, you can't do that, then as a writer, if your answer is, well, then I quit, then you're not a writer. If someone says you can't do that, then you're like, okay, I'm going to beat that joke with something else.
Jason Sklar is with us. Jason from St. Louis. We all grew up in the same era, so I don't think we've ever been through anything like this. I mean, maybe the 90s for a little while, but I mean, how do you view this right now as a Cardinals fan?
So, I mean, what's hard about it, and what's hard about the Dodgers winning, is unfortunately, like, a roadmap to success is like, you really have to put a lot of money into a team, and you really have to like make strong, bold moves. And so when you go through periods where you feel like it's not happening as much, then it gets super frustrating. And yeah, I agree. It's been a long stretch since the Cardinals, you know, and we had 2011, 12. Well, mm-hmm. I'm blanking on David Freese. 11. Like that World Series for us, like, I think that buys you as an organization about a decade of goodwill. And we're leaving that time frame a little bit. And I think Cardinals fans, like, I went to a game this year and there were maybe 20,000 fans in the stands. And I'm like, I can't ever remember in the fifth inning. I can't even remember a game. It was in August, so it wasn't like an end of the season. And I'm like, where is everybody? And is this a message that's being sent back to the team? We need to do better. And I think we knew this year was going to be like a rebuilding year anyway. But like, you can't string too many of those together without like heading in the right direction and possibly winning. So you either have to go one of two directions. We're going to spend a ton of money and we're going to make this team like a powerhouse and we're just going to start collecting superstars. Or you have to go back to sort of what the Cardinals did so well for so long, which is like, we're going to build up through the draft and getting young guys, and then we're going to get them into the league and develop them on the field. And I think the other thing that as a Cardinals fan, I say we're starting to realize a little bit. It's like I tell my wife this, because now I'm working this full-time writing job. I'm like, now you're going to realize how much I do around the house because I'm going to be gone all day. You guys think that I don't do anything. You're going to get mad at me because I'm not picking everyone up at 3:30. Yeah, now you're going to miss me. Well, I feel like Yadier Molina can say that to the team, because it's like, oh, yeah, the reason why all those pitchers were great, the reason why Kyle Loesch came to the Cardinals and went 15-9 and then went to another team and was 9-15. Yadier Molina, people, that guy should take so much credit for that insane run that the Cardinals went on. He called incredible games, and that's a huge part of the team. So if the Cardinals can get a couple pieces like that, go get the next Yadier Molina and watch the team get better in a hot second.
It's Jason Sklar, the Sklar Brothers, in the Flyover Comedy Festival, flyovercomedyfest.com, to get tickets to see them November 13th through the 16th. Support the festival and support the Sklar Brothers. We love you, man. Thanks so much for being with us.
Love you, too. Keep doing your great show on Camo X.
You're the best. The Sklar Brothers. November 13th through the 16th, the Flyover Comedy Festival with Chris Ronji, Tom Ackerman.
Back tomorrow with Bernie Miklas at 12.
Bernie's with you. Thanks for joining us.